All right, good morning, everyone. So I am, I desire your best prayers to get through this morning. I'm having some, I was joking with Jimmy, I'm having some problems with my teeth, and I'm drooling a lot. I knew Crystal would enjoy that. Yes, I'm drooling a little bit. Long story for another day, but my jaw hurts. So I'm if I get a little bit anxious or start frowning or something, that means the painkillers have worn off. I'm not angry with you. It's just kind of happening. I am hopefully we will be able to really grow from this next topic. We're going to spend a month, the month of April, talking about the evidence of God, what it means that we are aware of the evidence of God. And I felt like Chad really did a great job last Sunday kind of setting us up for this topic and talking about just the vastness, the magnitude, and how it's frankly not something that we can really measure, and really almost it's difficult for us to appreciate just how big and how powerful God is and how special that is, because frankly, as amazing as God is, the fact that we can't even quantify it, and yet he cares about each one of us very specifically in a very impassioned and personal way. Now, as we go through this particular series, understand this is not necessarily, let's look at the evidence of God for someone who may be an atheist or agnostic. It's not necessarily going to apply in that way, because even though there will be some of those things, I want us to really look at the evidence of God, because sometimes for us, the difficulty is not knowing that God is there, but it can sometimes be that we can ignore the signs of God's presence in our lives. We can almost forget how personal and how, you know, very intentional God is in the ways in which he deals with us. And so I want to look at this, but before we even go into much of that, I want to start at a point where we can ask ourselves the question, what is it that limits my ability to see God's power? What is it that stands in the way for me as an individual from being able to really appreciate God in my life? What is it that, because, you know, let's face it, the longer you're a Christian, the more that you read, the more that you pray, the more that you grow, sometimes we can almost get to a point where we're not intentionally doing it, but we can sometimes just take God's presence for granted. We can almost forget how amazing God is, not just in creating the universe, but how amazing it is that he intervened and he stepped in and he did something in our own lives. And I want to break this down today in such a way that we can kind of deconstruct it and really look at it on a very individual level. Because each person in here, God deals with each of us. Just like when you have children, every child's not the same. And so while you may have some guiding principles in the way that you parent your children, you do things differently for each child. And in the same way, God works in us and he does things with us in very personal ways. And I kind of want to look at that. The title of the sermon today is Wins and Losses. Wins and Losses. Now, the reason why I gave it that title is multiple reasons, but primarily because when we think about what it means to be a winner, when we think about what it means to be, you know, someone who is achieving and accomplishing things, or what it means to even be a success, very often that confuses and it confounds and it can sometimes be disruptive to our faith and how we grow, because we sometimes forget that God doesn't view wins and losses the same way that we view wins and losses. What God considers righteousness isn't necessarily the same thing that we consider righteousness. What is just for God isn't necessarily what we consider to be just. And so it's very important that before we start looking at the evidence of God, before we start peeling back the layers on, well, how do I know God is present, we have to first start with the understanding that we have to be in line with God's way of thinking. Now, you know, I was talking about this whole idea of winners and losers. And, you know, I started coaching baseball this year. My son, this is his first year playing baseball. And, you know, it's very interesting because when you've got somebody who's new to a sport, like these little kids, you know, you're coaching a bunch of 8, 9, and 10-year-olds. Some of the kids are better than others. Some of them have played for a little while. Others, this is their first time playing. And so what is an accomplishment for one kid isn't necessarily much of an accomplishment for another. For one kid to be able to throw the ball straight is an accomplishment. For others, you know, it's a little bit different. And see, this applies to how we look at God. Very often, you know, we have this idea that, well, if I'm not a winner in my own mind, then God doesn't necessarily love me. Or, you know, how can this God who says that he loves all of his children, all creation, how can he allow me to suffer? How can he allow me to not be a winner? And we almost have to look at this and kind of step back and start at the point of, well, what does God consider succeeding? You know, I love this commercial. There was a commercial with Flo from Progressive, and she's consoling her partner, and, you know, she's telling him, you know, it's going to be okay. You can't always win, right? And then he says, you know, she says she's going to give him some ice cream, and he says, with sprinkles? And she said, no, sprinkles are for winners, right? And it's like, man, that was kind of cold, you know? Like, it was funny, but it's like, man, that's messed up. See, sometimes we have that thing where we're thinking, well, is God really present in my life? Because I'm not getting many sprinkles. You know, maybe sprinkles are just for one. Maybe blessings are just for that subset of Christians who are really doing it better than me. And we can almost forget that God's power is not displayed that way. His presence is not displayed based on your station in life and what you've accomplished and what you failed at. That those wins and losses, the way that we calculate wins and losses is not the way that God looks at it. And I want to look at a few examples of this when we talk about strengths and weaknesses. Very often we think of our strengths as being those things that God wants to use in us, in the areas where God is showing up in our life. And in our weaknesses, we almost want to hide those things. Because that's what our world, that's what our society says. Yet, God kind of, you know, turns this on its ear a little bit. And I want to look at 2 Corinthians chapter 12. I put it up there wrong. In 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we're going to start in verse 1. Paul says, I must go on boasting, although there is nothing to be gained. I will go on to visions and revelations from the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, he was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things that no one is permitted to tell. I will boast about a man like that, but I will not boast about myself, except about my weaknesses. Even if I should choose to boast, I would not be a fool, because I would be speaking the truth. But I refrain, so no one will think more of me than is warranted by what I do or say, or because of these surpassingly great revelations. Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan, to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, For my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I'm weak, then I am strong. We see something that's a little bit different than what most people think of as God. Paul's saying here that my accomplishments and the things that I've done, the success I've had, the areas where I'm strong, I'm not going to boast on those things. I'm going to boast on my weaknesses, my shortcomings, the things that I failed at, the things that I'm not strong in. He says, because God's power is made perfect in weakness. That completely flies in the face of what most people think of when they think of God, because most people, they think of God like, if I worship God, if I serve God, if I love God and he truly loves me, then he's going to bless me and give me the things that I want. That I'm going to receive those blessings. And those things. He's saying, no, actually, I'm going to delight in those hardships, insults, those struggles. Why is that? Because that's where God's presence, his evidence, is often found. Part of the difficulty in seeing God is because oftentimes we don't want to go to that place. We don't want to actually see. It's not that we don't want to see God, we don't want to see him working. It's that we don't want to go to that place where we're going to have to suffer, where we're going to be in a place that is our weakness. You know, we don't necessarily want to be there. I think of it like when I go to the gym and I'm struggling to put some weight, and they tell you, you know, if you're going to lift weights, you should have a spotter, somebody to kind of be there to help you. You know, but men, our egos, we don't want a spotter. And oftentimes, we don't even want to go and push ourselves to push more weight because we know that it requires us to have a spotter. It's the same thing. Very often, it's difficult for us to see God because we don't want to go to the places where we're the weakest. We don't want to identify those things. Recognizing God's power very often starts with knowing that we're not God. That we're not God. We don't have control. We don't understand everything. And that if we are to really fully appreciate God's presence in our lives, that we have to be willing to look at it his way. You know, another way of putting it is, you know, I think about how with my children, you know, my children, they don't necessarily know what's best for them all the time. And very often they don't understand why it is that there are certain things that their mother and myself require them to do. It may seem painful. It may not seem fair. We went through this yesterday at the baseball game. William was asked to go up and yell, "Play ball." And he was a little bit apprehensive. He was a little scared. But then they said, "No, your dad's going to come with you." So he was cool with it at that point. Well, they didn't ask Kendall. And this turned into a problem. Nothing would console her. Nothing would cheer her up. Nothing would make her feel good, because in her mind, she's like, this isn't just, this isn't fair, this isn't right. Why is it that my brother gets this thing, he gets to go up in front of all these people and yell, "Play ball," but I don't? We have a difficult time understanding that God's ways are not necessarily our ways, and yet, while he is present, and while he makes things clear to us, and while we may understand it later, the fact is, in that moment, it's not that God's not there. It's just that we're not God, and we want things to go our way. You know, Paul here is saying, I ask God. He says, I asked him three times, take this thing away. Remove this from me. And he said, my grace is sufficient. Very often, we have a difficult time appreciating that God's grace is in fact sufficient, but also that his grace is enough. When we receive that grace, is when we can see God in the evidence that he is there in our lives. This is a book, a gentleman by the name of Philip Yancey, titled, Where is God When It Hurts? Where is God When It Hurts? Now, full disclosure, I borrowed this book from downstairs sometime back. I haven't actually even finished it, but I read part of this book. Part of what got me to thinking about this book is he wrote a follow-up, a sequel. This was a bestseller, but he followed up with a sequel. The question that never goes away, why? Because very often, people who go through hardships, go through difficult times in life, they think, why is this thing happening? Why would God allow people to struggle and suffer and go through pain and hardship? Why didn't he just remove evil in the first place? Why is it that God would allow these things to go on if he's a loving God? You know, hence the first title of his book, Where is God When It Hurts? Now, the premise of the book was his father developed a disease. He died when he was 24. And the author, Philip, he was one at the time, so he never knew his dad. And he said that the church that they were a part of, he said his father was a missionary, doing a lot of work in the ministry. And there were people whose faith was shaken because they thought, how can a loving God let such a powerful and impactful and influential man for him die of this awful disease? Even for himself, he thought, why was I never allowed to, oh, what is this? Okay. We'll make sure to cut that out of the audio. But he asked a question. He said, why is it that I was not allowed to grow up with my dad? I was not given the opportunity to be able. This can't be happening. Wow. Okay. See, that's another one of those questions. Why would God allow that to keep popping up on the screen, right? And it's back again. Okay, we're gonna blame this one on Jimmy, because I have nobody else to blame it on, right? But we asked the question, why? He was asking the question, why is God allowing these things to happen? He said, my father, he was doing the work of the Lord. He was doing the right things. Why? Why would he allow him to die? Why would he allow his mother to go through that suffering, that pain? You know, it's interesting. I'm going to give a little demonstration. Sometimes we can't see God the way we want to. This was a quote, that faith is seeing light with your heart when all your eyes see is darkness. Now, I'm going to give a little demonstration. This is for, it's not a perfect demonstration. But I'm standing right here, right? And I have this phone in my hand. You can't see it. Now, just from this angle, Curtis and Alethea, they can see it. Lee can probably see it. If Pat leans over, she might be able to see it. I could raise this phone up here, and Miss Shanita's back there, and she probably still can't see it, right? And then I could, say, well, you can't see it, but if I turn the volume up loud enough, you might be able to hear it, right? But George could come up here to the front row. And if he didn't have his hearing aid in, he still wouldn't be able to hear it. But that doesn't mean that it's not here. And it doesn't mean that Lee, she's standing there and she is stomping. I'm looking at it. I know it's there. But Jimmy's view is obstructed by this podium. And he can't see it. Maybe Jimmy's not paying attention. See, when we think about God, oftentimes we forget that what we have to do is align ourselves with his vision. We have to be where he needs us to be and wants us to be in order to see him clearly. Sometimes our faith can get rattled because we're not seeing God in our lives, but it's because we've moved from this row back to this row. Or we pass judgment on another person. Well, I don't understand why their faith is so weak and why they can't see it. Well, sometimes we have to invite them to the front row Sometimes we have to say, well, you know what? Maybe we need to just remove this podium altogether so that everybody can see it clearly. But are we willing to do the work that requires us to make it so that others can see God? And that's just if God were small like that, right? You know, if there were, you know, I was thinking to myself, if someone were about to attack me in here, but I knew that the building was surrounded by a SWAT team, you might think, oh my goodness, how can he stand there with all that faith and bravery knowing that he's okay? It's like, well, because I know the SWAT team's about to come in here. I know they're out there. I've seen them. But you can't see them because you're sitting down. I can see because I'm looking out the window. Very often, it's our perspective and our view, our angle. We have to move so that we can have a better angle, a better view, and see God. I want to look at an example of this in Matthew chapter 26. Then Jesus went to his disciples to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to them, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took Peter and the two sons of Zebedee along with him, and he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour? He asked Peter. "Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." He went away a second time and prayed, "My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done." When he came back, he again found them sleeping, because their eyes were heavy. So he left them and went away once more and prayed a third time, saying the same thing. Then he returned to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Look, the hour has come, and the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." You know, I chose this because this is very similar to what we saw that Paul did. That thorn in his flesh. He went and he asked three times, take it away. We see here Jesus doing something the exact same way. He goes and he's three times he says, "Take this cup away from me. I don't want to have to go to the cross. I don't want to do this, but not my will, your will." You see, that whole "not my will, but your will" thing, that willingness to trust God, it wasn't that Jesus didn't understand God's plan. It wasn't that he couldn't see it clearly, but he had to bring himself in alignment with what God wanted. And a lot of that was because he understood God's plan. He saw it very clearly. Like I said, if I've got something back here hidden behind this podium, you know, and it's dangerous, I got a gun or something, you might see Alethea jump up and run, and Lee, she's ducking under chairs. And everybody would think, well, what is wrong with them? Because they see what's so dangerous. They see what is startling them. You know, you would hear something. Oftentimes our view, we can't hear God, and we're not seeking to be in alignment with what his will is. And oftentimes we think, well, that's not fair, or that's not right, or that's not just. Or why would God want that thing for me? Because he gets the whole view. He gets the whole picture. Something that we can't fathom. It is often God's justice and will for our life that we question, not his existence or his presence. Very often, it's not people who decide, I don't want to be a follower of Christ. I don't want to submit to God. It's not because they don't know God is God. It's not because God is not real. It's because they don't feel like God's been particularly fair to them. That God's not just. That I should have more, or I should have something better. Going back to that whole winning and losing thing, our idea and our understanding of God, if we're going to be winners, It's not that we get everything we want and that God just heaps blessings on us, but winning is being able to know the will of our Father and being desirous of being in compliance and being in alignment with what His will is. Not just knowing the right things, not just knowing that He's there, but the reason why we read our Bibles and we pray and we come to church and we study with one another, we pray for one another, is so that we can better understand His will, what He wants us to do, and why He wants us to do it. We know that we're not going to understand it all on this side, but we trust because He has shown us time and time again that He's faithful. Again, it's being able to be able to see, you know, bring yourself in alignment so that you can see and hear God's will. And when we struggle in our faith, it can almost always be brought back to how close are you to God? How well are you hearing God? If you've experienced something that was painful, you've gone through a hard part in your life, you see destruction, you look around, you watch the news, you see these things happening, and you think, how can a just God do such a thing? Not, is there a God, but do I really understand why God would allow these things to take place? You know, there's this concept, I don't know if you all are aware of this or have ever studied it out, it's called meritocracy. Basically, meritocracy is the idea that the people who are the most skilled and the most talented and have the most to give, that those people deserve to have the most. They deserve to be the ones who are in charge. It's the idea that the person who has the most talent and the most resources, that they should be the ones on top. You know, if I just work the hardest, if I'm just the good person, if I just do the best, then I should automatically receive the most or the best. And very often, this view is what confounds our understanding of God. Because very often, people feel like, well, hey, if I've got the most, and I've got the most money, if I've got the most skill, if I'm the smartest, if I've got the most knowledge, if I've got all these things, then why isn't God blessing my life? I'm the one who is doing the right thing. Why isn't God blessing me more than He's blessing this other person? And see, that idea of meritocracy is oftentimes what distorts our view of God. I want to look at one last passage here in Matthew chapter 20. Starting in verse 1, it says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, 'You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right.' So they went. He went out again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, 'Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?' 'Because no one has hired us,' they answered. He said to them, 'You also go and work in my vineyard.' When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, 'Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first.' The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. 'These who were hired last worked only 1 hour,' they said. 'And you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day.' But he answered one of them, 'I am not being unfair to you, friend. Did you agree to work for the denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. You know, I have to tell you, when I was a young man in particular, that was a tough story to really digest and understand. But it's because of that idea of meritocracy, right? Oftentimes we feel like I'm doing the most work in God's kingdom. You know, I'm serving the most. I'm giving the most. Why is it that God seems to be giving so much to these other people and they've done only a fraction of what I've done? Some because they haven't known, they haven't been following Jesus as long. Others because maybe their faith wasn't as strong as mine. And we can almost get into this idea where we think that God's justice has to align with our justice instead of us aligning to his. He says, are you really angry because of what I paid you? Or are you upset because of how generous I am? You see, God, his holiness, his righteousness, we don't even understand it. Just like we can't understand how big and how vast, we can't quantify that. We also, because of our limitations, can't quantify how just and how righteous he is. And yet very often, the difficulty that we have in serving God and loving him and appreciating him comes down to the fact that we have a difficult time appreciating his justice and his fairness. To better see and understand God requires that we reassess our view of righteousness. Because oftentimes, God's righteousness is right there on display. His justice, his holiness, his grace, his compassion is right there on display, but we can't see it because we may feel like we deserve it and others don't. Because we've come up with the scales of justice that we want to apply to a situation. There are people who have frankly left God. They've said, I don't want to follow him anymore. And it comes down to this idea that they feel like, well, because how can I believe in a God who took my wife or took my mother or took something from me as though it wasn't from grace, as though it wasn't already God's, as though he doesn't deserve to do what he needs to do and what he wants to do for his purpose. We have to frankly, reassess and really dig deep to ask ourselves if we truly trust God in his righteousness and his holiness and who he is, would we behave the same way? Because very often when we're lukewarm, when we're not really faithful, when we're not really diligent about following Jesus and doing the work that we're expected to do, it's not because we don't know that God created the whole universe. It's because we just don't feel like God is being fair to us. We feel like, frankly, we deserve more. We should have more. And I'll say this, guilty is charged. You know, there are times, and I think I may have shared this, but there have been times in the past, especially when I was a young man, I frankly could not understand why it was that God did not allow me to move forward in the ministry. It's just that simple. And it wasn't because consciously I felt like I deserved it, but I felt like I was doing all the work. I've been doing this since I was a young boy. I felt like I was living right. So why was I going through all the struggles with other people, my peers, other friends? Why is it that they were accepted? Why is it they were getting something that I wanted? Because I had to understand that God had a purpose and a will that would not have been able to be carried out if I had gotten what I wanted back when I was 20. If I had gotten the things that I wanted back when I was 25 or 30 even. It required me to look at this very passage and others like it and think, do I trust the God that created this amazing universe? Like Chad laid out, all these different things. Do I really trust him? Do I really believe that his will is right? Because if I do, I need to be praying and fasting and seeking out how I can have my heart in the right place and be in compliance with his will, more so than questioning his justice and his righteousness. Because this is ultimately what harms so many people when it comes to their faith and not being able to see God clearly. Do we really believe that God is righteous, that he's holy, that he is completely just, and that we can trust him even when we don't always understand? I'll close here. A few questions. Number one, in what areas of my life do I question God's justice and righteousness? Do I accept God as perfect in every way? And I put that in there in every way, because very often we may not consciously do it, but we can almost feel like, well, yeah, God is perfect except when it comes to me. Well, I'm sure he understands what works for, you know, Miss Margaret, or what works for Tony here, but for me, he may have missed something. Maybe he didn't quite understand, because if he understood, if he was truly just and he was really paying attention to me, he wouldn't have allowed this thing to happen to me. He wouldn't have put me through that. And again, it's that perspective, it's that angle. Oftentimes, we have to adjust ourselves and move so that we can see what it is that God really wants. Then we can submit to his will and be in compliance. Do disappointments in life cause me to question God and his ways of strengthening my faith and conviction that he knows best? Do disappointments in my life cause me to question God? Ultimately, this is where if our faith is going to be rooted in something that is going to last, sometimes, and I would argue most times, this is where the rubber meets the road. Do we trust God when we are disappointed or hurt or angry, or we don't agree with his decision? We talked about this a few weeks ago about the referee, right? Makes a bad call. You didn't like this. Well, here's the thing. God doesn't make bad calls. God doesn't miss the play. He wasn't looking over here when he should have been looking over here. The question is, does it rattle our faith when we are disappointed? Do we question God when we don't get something in life? When we don't get that promotion, when we don't get those accolades, when we are not blessed sufficiently in a way that we feel like our behavior merited? Does it strengthen my faith and conviction? Because we saw that with Paul. He said, his power is made perfect. His power is made relevant, and it becomes clear, and it strengthens me when I go through suffering and people talk bad about me, when I go through these painful experiences. Do painful experiences increase your faith in God, or do they take away from it? Does my desire to be my best run counter to, or in concert with, my desire to know God and do his will? Is the very concept of meritocracy what keeps me from seeing God clearly? I raise this because oftentimes, you know, society tells us that the best thing to do, if you have to choose between, you know, I use this example, if you've got to choose between two jobs, well, choose the one with the highest salary, right? Choose the one with the best benefits, right? Choose the one with the best, you know, things for you. And yet, sometimes God's will is for you to do something different. And it may be to make $10,000 or $15,000 less. And you think, well, I could do a lot with, you know, $15,000. And I'm sure you could. But could you do and complete the will of God the best if this is going to take you away from his work? One of my good friends, his name is Dave. He lives outside of Baltimore now. And we were talking. We were having a conversation. He's leading a congregation there. It's relatively small. It's relatively new. And one of the things he was talking to me about was his job. He was saying how, you know, he works. He's vice president of a company. And, you know, he's been in the ministry before. Like, this is not something where it's, you know, new to him. But he was saying he's a little bit conflicted because he says he wants to do the right thing financially and, you know, be able to maintain, because obviously the church, being as small as it is and relatively new, it can't support him. But he also feels like he's working so much that it's taking away from his ability. And it's not like in the past where he was in a much larger congregation and they were on more solid footing financially. And, you know, he was just kind of asking me and, you know, picking my brain a little bit. And my response to him was, at the end of the day, there is no ministry that you see with Jesus in the Bible that did not involve people in relationships. Now, if you can work 60 hours a week and still invest in relationships with people, then your ministry will be fine. The work that you're doing will grow because you have the right heart in your faith and you're in the right place. But if you can't, then clearly either you leading in this capacity is not the will of God, or this job is not the will of God. And sometimes we get so caught up and confused that we forget that it's that simple. Whatever is going to allow me to better pursue the will of God in my life, that is always the answer. That's always what it comes down to. But it starts with us having a desire and a conviction that we want our lives to run in concert with instead of counter to God's will. Very often, your strengths and the things that you think of as strengths are not the things that God wants to use right now to work in your life. Sometimes he wants to focus on those weaknesses. Because those weaknesses, it's what makes you like everybody else. It's what makes you human. It's what humbles you. It brings you to a place where it's no longer just look at me, it's look at God. Because you know that if they're looking at you in that moment of weakness, well, there's no God there unless you're pointing it back to God. Unless you're showing that God is what matters, not my failures, not my shortcomings, because grace is what saves us all. People can't just be saved by your example. Your example matters, but it's your example of being like Christ. It's your example of humility. And oftentimes, we don't want to go to that humble place. We don't want to show people that we're failing. We don't want people to see that weakness because the world says that's wrong when God says that's the only way to me is grace. And finally, will I serve God and continue to seek him even when life is not what I expect it to be? What does it mean to be faithful? And I throw that last question in there because, you know, I use the example of marriage a lot. You know, there's a lot of times when we can say, yeah, I'm in this marriage and we're going to just grind it out. We're just going to make it work. We're going to find a way and we'll struggle and we'll fight like cats and dogs until it's over, right? And yet, the real question is that actually being faithful? Is it faithful to just grind it out? Or do you want to understand? Do you want to better love and support in that relationship? And the same thing applies with God, because very often, when life isn't exactly how we expect it, we can have this attitude of, I know that I need to follow Jesus. I know that I need to be a Christian. I know I need to be at church. I know I need to pray. I know I need to read my Bible. I should probably show up to this meeting. I should probably serve or share something with my neighbor, my friend. But in reality, I'm displeased with the way that I'm living. I'm displeased with the way my life is set up. And so really, I'm just grinding it out. I'm not really happy with what God's doing. I don't really trust that this is God's will for me. So I'm just going to grind it out. Is that really what it means to be faithful? And so the challenge for us today is to really ask ourselves as we continue to look at God. I'm looking around here and I know everybody in here. And guess what? I know that we all have a concept and an understanding of who God is. But are we all looking at him the right way? Do we all have the perspective that when I can't see God clearly, I'm going to move a little bit closer? When I can't hear him clearly, I'm going to come a little bit closer. I'm going to sit in another spot. Or am I just unhappy that I'm not seeing God the way that I expected to see him? Because as simple as it may sound, sometimes we just don't want to get up and move seats. I kind of like where I've been sitting, right? You know, I can look around, it's like I'm looking, you know, Lee, she's pretty happy with her seat there. But if she can't see God from that seat, are you willing to move so that you can see what his will is and be in compliance with that and be able to love and appreciate that very thing? If this is an area in your life that you need prayer, that you need to be able to hear it and see it more clearly, if it's painful, well, guess what? Sometimes it is going to be painful, but this is why God allows us to have the church, so that we can help one another, so that we can teach one another, so that we can pray for one another. If this is something that seeing God and being able to appreciate God and being able to understand God when it hurts, God when it's not necessarily going my way, come forward as we sing the song of invitation. Receive the prayers of the church. Get help with that very thing. Because what we don't want to do is just grind it out, knowing that God is there, but not really having the heart that says, I accept God's will, and I accept what God is showing me, and if I can't see it, I want to be able to see God's will for my life. Please stand as we sing our song of invitation.